welcome to Acts of the Blood God, an independent RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Joining me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, Kat. Here we are together again, all three of us, for the first time in a little while.
I think we were here last week, too.
Were we?
Yeah.
You were absolutely all here last
week. And Shivam was here, too.
That's right. And you were there, and you were there. Okay, so I'm thinking the week before.
The entire party is here. Also joining us, it's our local bard. It's Eric Van Allen.
I'm the bard?
You're a bard now?
He's the Beastmaster.
I'm trying to dodge the bard accusations. I'm trying to, like, fix my public image. Yeah, Poe is here to help me be the Beastmaster that I've always been meant to be.
The harder According you resist to the... being a bard, the more likely you are to be a bard in your heart and can't escape it. I've tried.
I'm very musically inclined, Harvest Lunatic says. I don't know. Poe is my backup singer. I'll take that. I'm a bard master. We'll do that. I'm a bard master.
According to the official merch that you can buy on shop.bloodgodpod.com, I am a warrior of light or a knight. Nadia is the dragoon. And Eric is the beastmaster. And Victor is a blue mage. So those, our jobs are officially set.
Who's healing? Is anyone healing?
There's no healing happening.
No. Actually, blue mages are one of the strongest healers in Final Fantasy V.
Oh, so, I guess if they get, mega heal or white wind or something, that'll do it.
Yeah, it's actually practically essential against some of the bosses in that game to have a blue mage. Eric, when you play all of the Final Fantasies, remember to get a blue mage, because you're going to need some of those spells.
Remember
for sure.
to get a blue mage, just in general. Find a blue mage.
Find a blue mage. Go to your local corner and yell, hey, is anyone here a blue mage? And you will get a great response, I promise. Nobody will drag you away.
Have we done a class conscious around blue mages yet?
I think we did, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great topic to have. But that's not the topic this week. Actually, our topic this week is 2025 so far. The biggest stories, the biggest surprises, our sleeper favorites, our RPG of the year so far, and our most anticipated RPGs for the rest of 2025. It's all coming up. We're also going to be talking about Sega revealing the sales for numerous of their RPGs. New info on Final Fantasy Tactics Remastered, including some content that's not going to be included. And Nadia is going to be talking about her new love of Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. That's all coming up. But first, if you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. Hey, guess what? For just five bucks a month, you can get this show ad-free and support us and make it possible to create this thing. For a little bit more money, you get access to our Pantheon, the Pantheon of the Blood God, and all of our bonus content. We did a watch of Frieren not too long ago. Coming up very soon, we're going to be wrapping up our book club for the fifth season, which has been awesome. And we have a lot of other bonus content as well, but that's only accessible through the Patreon. We're also on a really sweet Discord. We have an amazing community, especially if you play Final Fantasy XIV. And by the way, we have a sister podcast. It's called Charlian Dropouts. You can also get access to that through the Patreon. Whew, so much bonus content. It's crazy. I already mentioned that we have merch at shop.blogpod.com. We have cool mugs and play mats and things like that. And we have a newsletter at blogpod.com, which you can subscribe to over there. Nadia does things every week, and it's a little dose of chaos, a little pitch shows up in my inbox every single week exclusively for our patrons.
Yeah, I think last week's title was We Can't Stop Here, This is Donkey Kong Country. My argument was basically, I think Donkey Kong Bonanza is RPG adjacent, and I think I'm right, because there's a skill tree, Kat. Congratulations on the skill tree. He and Pauline can equip different items to like help them with certain stats and swimming and whatnot, like swimming faster, for example. And honestly, like, we talk about how Breath of the Wild and Twilight Princess are RPG adjacent, so we accept them. And it just seems to me that this game is more Breath of the Wild than Mario Odyssey, or at least this is what we're trying to pass it off as. If you watch the trailers, you can kind of see a couple of instances, at least, where Kong is kind of clambering up the cliff and is lit by the sunset, very very much the money shot, the monkey shot, if you will, from Breath of the Wild trailers. So, yeah. If you subscribe to the $5 level, you'll get all kinds of newsletters full of those kinds of insights.
Okay. The Donkey Kong money shot. Classic.
Ook.
Few more things. Coming up this week, we're going to do another vote for the next side quest. Stay tuned. It's a secret what it's going to be. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be really cool.
Do we decide on this? Okay.
No, it's coming up soon. No.
It's planned, folks.
It's going to be fine. Maybe game related. Maybe game related this time around. Also, we're doing our Trails in the Sky monthly game club, which you can access through Discord. And coming up next week, it's our fourth annual. I had to check on this. Fourth annual Acts of the Blood God charity stream benefiting Trans Lifeline. It's all going down next Saturday and next Sunday, and we have tons of amazing segments. We're going to be drafting the ultimate RPG party. We're going to be playing Mario Kart with the community. Eric and I are going to be throwing down a Magic the Gathering Commander. I'm going to be doing my Nuzlocke run for the fourth year in a row, and maybe I'll get all 8 badges, or maybe my party will die horribly. Whom's can say? We're going to have special guests. We're going to have giveaways. We're going to be giving away magic cards. We have pre-cons and boxes for Final Fantasy. Holy cow. Amazing. And lots of other things as well. It's all going down at twitch.tv/bloodgodpod. Come and benefit trans rights with Acts of the Blood God. Anybody want to add anything? That was my spiel. Eric, you want to add anything?
I'm dealing with a rambunctious cat over here, but yeah, we've got a ton of great stuff planned, a lot of great segments. Not announcing all the guests yet because they're still getting locked in, but we have just a ton of amazing things lined up. We also have the Indie Site Throwdown, which will be a really fun time.
Yeah.
I've concocted some crazy schemes and shenanigans, which Kat and Nadia cannot know about because one of them will be competing in the Indie Site Throwdown as a member of Axe the Blood God. So,
oh no,
y'all can't know about that. But if you head to the Mailbag channel, I have a mission for you, the listeners at home in Blood God. I need y'all to go do something for me and do it at your earliest convenience. So get on that. You've got a week. Send me your worst. That's what I'll say.
When you said you were dealing with a rambunctious cat, I was like, well, it's true. I did get another cup of coffee, but I didn't know if I was really that rambunctious.
Cat with a C.
Actually, speaking of rambunctious cats, I have a newsletter that goes out every week. It's called Nintendo Cats. It's with a K, nintendocats.beehive.com. It's not spelled like beehive, like the bzz, bzz. It's spelled like B-E-E-H-I-I-V for some reason. Beehive. So go check that out. Nintendocats.beehive.com. Subscribe. That goes out every week. Please subscribe. Please support me in my random Nintendo related endeavors. Okay. Rewind. Backwards. Oh my gosh. I really am a rambunctious cat. Before we continue, every single week we highlight a star of Destiny and say thanks to them for their support. And this week's star of Destiny is Harvest Lunatic. Harvest Lunatic, thanks so much for your support and encouraging us to keep the pre-show. I really enjoy doing it every week. So thank you. Yeah.
You saved us.
Yeah. Thank you. You saved us from ourselves. All right. This week we're talking about 2025 so far. We're going to be talking about the RPGs, and we're going to be sharing our RPG of the year so far. And so let's just start at a high level. Has it been a good year for RPGs, Eric?
Just what our favorite RPGs are so far this year?
No, I mean,
just in general, has it been a good year?
I don't know.
It's been pretty good.
It's been hard. Like I think this is a thing that most people will probably relate to, is that like it's hard to separate the surrounding circumstances of a year from the actual, like, what are the video games that came out this year? Because in terms of video games that came out this year, incredible year. Like really, really good year. I think like games like Clair Obscur, 100 Line and stuff like that have immediately just like shot up my personal list of like all-time favorite games. But it's also been kind of a weird year as well. Like, there are really big peaks, but I also think there's like valleys that match mm-hmm. that, you know. There's, I think we're about to hit one right now where we were talking about it before the show. I don't really know what the latter half of this year looks like, and I was kind of waiting for SGF to kind of lay that out and set the tone moving forward. And the fact that there weren't a lot of huge big games at SGF made me think that this is going to be a very front stacked year, like a front heavy year that ends up just kind of like rolling along as it goes along, but we'll see. But so far I think, like, games wise this has been a very good year, especially if you like indie games, like strange weird oddities and stuff that isn't kind of like par for the course type stuff. It's been a very good year for those.
I agree. I think that there, as usual, have been some really excellent surprises and some games that maybe didn't quite hit the levels that I was hoping that they would hit. We'll be talking to about those in just a moment. And then, of course, we had the Switch 2, which I think has dominated a lot of the discourse, at least recently. Nadia, how have you been feeling about this year in RPGs?
It's been a year where there's been a couple of really big triumphs. Like, I love Fantasy Life. I poured a whole bunch of, you know, hours into that, and there's still more coming, apparently. Of course, Clair Obscur. What we'll be talking about in the Tavern, of course, what I find is that I'm using my Switch 2 as a good backlog machine, because there's some really great upgrades to some games that really, really needed it. I mean, right now, like I've said, I'm going through Scarvi, and that's a whole-ass RPG by itself, so kind of happy to be doing that, even if we do end up having a lighter latter half of the year. I'm sure I'll find things to play.
Well, let's just start with the biggest surprises. Eric already mentioned Expedition 33, and I think that's been the game that really kind of exploded out of the gates and really hit in a way that a lot of people did not expect. Obviously, we all know what Clair Obscur Expedition 33 is. It's a little Final Fantasy-esque game by a French studio. It's really cool. Everybody really vibed with not just the art style, but the turn-based battle system that managed to mix QTEs with really cool mechanics. And then also it had a pretty fantastic story and a lot of really memorable characters. And I think that one definitely has landed the hardest. And what's been most surprising to me, I think, is that Expedition 33 not only landed with RPG fans, which is what you would expect given that, given, you know, what its content, what it's all about, but that it managed to really hit with people who don't normally play RPGs. And that, I think, just speaks to how good a game that game is.
Yeah, I think people, it's kind of like the old Mario RPG conundrum. I've said it several times. When people really feel like they can participate in turn-based battles with, like, in Clair Obscur's case, like, really almost like DMC, like, attacks and counterattacks, they feel a lot more in control, and they feel more likely to adapt to an RPG, even if it's a little harder than normal, because in some ways, Clair Obscur can be quite difficult.
It's surprisingly difficult in terms of an RPG, and it is kind of weird that Clair Obscur kind of broke out the way it did, because you think about, like, okay, it's really tough, it's turn-based, it's kind of a modern game from a new studio that isn't really proven in the way that Square Enix or somebody like that is. But I think what Kat said, the like combination of a really good new aesthetic and a lot of novel things that we haven't really seen in games in the last few years. I mean, a lot of people have talked to death about the idea of, oh, this is what Final Fantasy should have been. I think that's kind of, I think that's neither here nor there. I think it's really a case of Sandfall made something that they really strongly believed in the same way that like Larian did with Baldur's Gate and Divinity and stuff like that. You see a lot of studios just leaning into, we are making a single player game about the things that we specifically enjoy. Maybe it was the Marathon statement that came out a while ago from Herman Hulse that was about like, oh, you know, player feedback and you know, we've really been like testing this game and stuff like that. It's like, no, this is made by somebody who just wanted to make something, not like focus test it, not like take a bunch of people into a room and find the consensus like median game that would appeal to everybody. But like, here is just a game that we really think will resonate and will work well. And Clair Obscur is that. And I think it's really memorable because of that. I think my three favorite games of the year so far are all games that really embody that idea of somebody just making the thing they want to play, and you can really feel the passion through it. So I think Clair Obscur embodies a lot of that like trend this year.
So it's for you, it's Clair Obscur. What are the other that you're talking about?
My current top three games of this year. Number one is Clair Obscur. Number two is Blueprints, an incredible video game, just absolutely amazing video game. And number three is The 100 Line Last Defense Academy.
Right.
And that one is an RPG, so we can talk about it a little bit. But yeah. I think all three of them really embody.
Does that count as a big surprise, or would you say that's just really good and no notes?
I think it counts as a surprise, because for those who don't know the story of 100 Line, it's from Tukio Games, which was a studio built by two really renowned narrative adventure mystery video game creators, Kazutaka Kodaka and Uchikoshi, who respectively worked on Danganronpa and Zero Escape. And they kind of left their respective homes to make this super studio, and then didn't really do a lot with it, if I'm being honest. There were kind of a lot of different projects that spun out of there. There was anime like Akudama Drive. There were games like Rain Code, and was it World's End Club, I think? And none of them really hit for me. Some of them did hit for other people. I know a friend of the show, Ken Shepard, really does like Rain Code. But I think everyone was expecting like the super game from them, like, oh, the guys who made Danganronpa and Zero Escape, two like really well received mystery adventure games, they've got to make something sick. And somehow 100 Line is that, while also being a really good tactics RPG, but still like incorporating a lot of things that make Danganronpa and Zero Escape both like really, really interesting. It's also like the forever game, as it turns out, because there are 100 endings in that game, and they're all actual endings. I'm still working my way through it. I think I'm like 60 to 80 hours into it at this point, and I've seen about like 18 endings, something like
that. Are you dedicated to this, Eric? Is this your mission in life?
I don't know if I'm going to see all 100 endings. I do want to see the true ending, or whatever the golden route ends up being, because I think there is one. And I do just enjoy booting it up and playing it and kind of just like chipping away at it over time. It's really funny that a lot of companies try to make the live service game like game that will demand your attention constantly. And it turns out the way to do that is just to make the Ulysses of video games, right? It's to make like
fantasy,
the book
like
that
Eyes whole thing. Like, yeah, you can run credits, but there's a whole bunch of stuff you can still do and more coming.
Exactly. Yeah. So it turns out that's actually a really effective way of building engagements and getting someone invested, is like, instead of being like, we'll feed you slop twice a month, is like, oh, what if we gave you this really beautiful packaged like narrative adventure that you'll always have something new to do in for the next like 100 hours of your life? Like, that sounds great. So yeah, it's been a really good year for creators just doing their thing and owning it, and especially for Tukio. I think this was a real it was a Final Fantasy I moment where they were like, this is make or break. We got to get this game out. We got to make this thing. We have to realize the vision of what the studio is supposed to be. And there are a lot of interviews and stuff out there with Kodaka and Uchikoshi talking about like, this needed to land. This needed to find an audience and be good, or else we're screwed. And
did it land though?
I think it did land. I mean, like,
I think it's critically acclaimed. I would put it almost in the sleeper favorites, because outside of the individual bubble, I don't know that I keep forgetting it came out this year.
I think it's, I would compare it to something like a Fire Emblem Three Houses, where if you don't pay attention to fandom circles or anything like that, you might think that like, oh, this game kind of came and went. But the number of Tumblr users who like glommed onto 100 Line because it is intensely memeable, because the cast is really lovable, because the entire setup, literally like its setup, is made to get you to think about fan fiction scenarios and what if things, because that's the whole idea, is it's branching. There's different choices you can make that will affect how things play out. So already you're like, oh, okay, if this happens or that happens, then they can wind up in this scenario. And it's built to encourage that kind of stuff. And so a lot of people have really like matched that energy and done a lot with it online.
It does feel like it has like on my Blue Sky feed, it's quite popular. I've seen quite a bit of conversation about it, and it does seem like it'll have a long tail, which is good.
It resurfaced one of my favorite Tumblr posts of all time, which is somebody posting, I literally only have $1 left to my name, and somebody messaging them and being like, send me your Venmo. And then the guy posts, what the hell? And it's his Venmo address, and it's them requesting $1. And the request says, give me your last dollar. It's
That's
really
pretty
good.
Funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quick, give me your Venmo.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me your Venmo. Thank you. And then it's a request for like demanding a dollar. Give me your last dollar.
So funny.
For me, 2025, my 2025 has been defined by three things. One is Expedition 33. One is actually Cyberpunk 2077, which was a really cool. Really cool RPG experience. I really had a good time with that, one.
I'll count that.
And then for me, I guess 2025 has been the year of Magic, the Gathering. Which I don't want to be annoying about it. It's just completely taken over my brain in a way that it's made it hard to focus on other RPGs.
Dang, Kat.
So, yeah, I guess. I've got a problem, Nadia. I'm hurting.
I have to go to there's got to be a Magic rehab.
Yeah, I'm sure there is, and I'm certainly not the first person to fall into the pit.
The pit. I'm not in the magic pit, I'm just in the pit.
Looking back at my photos on my phone.
It's all cards.
There's a lot of pictures of cards on that thing.
Oh,
now.
There is? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
It's like cute. me snapping photos of cards and sending them to people.
Are you like a coworker with a new baby? And here he is pooping, and here he is throwing up.
Oh, look at this sick pole, you know, that kind of thing. So, or what do you think of this card for this deck? So it's been hard to escape, but Final Fantasy's come and gone now. So maybe I've hit the top of the arc. And I'll start to become a normal person again, but I've gone very feral over Magic the Gathering over the past couple months.
You haven't stopped buying since Final Fantasy came and went, have you?
Certainly not.
Yeah.
I guess it's one of those dangerous things where it can start to hit the dopamine. And you're like, oh, well, I mean, I finished the decks, but how can I make more decks and keep getting that feeling of building a deck? Ah! So
that would be quite satisfying.
Can I ask you a probing, inquisitive question here?
Sure.
Are you going to stick with Magic the Gathering after Final Fantasy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
you're locked in.
I'm locked in. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I have a commander group that I'm playing with, and I might actually start playing kind of regularly with Shivam. So I have people that I play with, which helps.
Once you go Shiva, you can't go back.
I have a lot of friends who play Magic, which helps a lot, actually.
That does.
So,
yeah.
And that could be a very social event.
It's a good social activity. I don't go to game shops to do it. I don't want to draft with strangers. But I'm gonna play with friends. So that if anything keeps me involved, it's that. And they're like really, really into Magic, so
yeah,
Eric looks like he was like going to say something.
Mostly because I'm like, I'm kind of having that. I'm at that branching path right now where I'm like, okay, right now I enjoy playing MTG Arena. I want to assemble all the commander decks physically so I can have those. That's mostly so I can trick my friends and loved ones into playing commander. But I don't know if I I want to keep playing Magic, but I feel like Arena is probably just where I'm going to stick because I don't really have a good like local group right now.
Right.
And I feel like going to a local game store is always kind of a gamble. You know, this is not coming from anything from the Magic community, to be fair. This is from when I once tried playing Smash at a relatively competitive level, and going to a few Smash meetups and being like, oh, the vibes here are rancid.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is bad. This is not good. I don't want to be around this.
I have literally no interest in engaging with the Magic community at large. Though, shout outs to like Azixa over on the Discord. I think, as usual, the Blood God Magic community is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But going to game shops and stuff, not my scene for sure. But it really, really helps to have people who are local to you that you're playing with on the reg, who are your friends, that you can bounce ideas off. If it's just you mm-hmm. and you get some cards, like I think it's a lot harder to stick with it. But yeah, if there's anything that stood out to me about Final Fantasy's Magic set this year, it's that, okay, I want to take back a take that I had a while ago. There should be a Final Fantasy 17. There should be a Final Fantasy 25. There should be a Final Fantasy 35. Every single Final Fantasy is its own special thing with its own special personality, with its own special vibe and characters and music. And I love them all in different ways. Yes, even Final Fantasy 16. Getting Clive, getting the special Clive art. I'm like, yay, Clive.
It's good Jill. Art.
Yay, they're, Clive.
It's good art.
They're really cool characters, like Clive and Jill and Dion. Like, they're great characters. Yeah. I really love them.
Yeah, even Final Fantasy 14. I'm like, oh, who's this? Oh, the Shadowbringers. Yay.
Oh, so, you have no idea. Like 14, it's literally like the meme of like smiling Mr. Incredible and then like a thousand yard stare Mr. Incredible of like someone who has only played ARR playing the 14 deck and then someone who has played like who's patch current playing the 14 deck. Yeah. Yeah. You'll understand.
Yeah. I'll understand someday.
So
I think every one of them, I think one of the reasons this set has hit so much with a lot of people is that everybody has their favorite. Everybody has the cards that they want to get. They're the people who are like, oh my God, they have, look at this Final Fantasy VIII, these Final Fantasy VIII cards. Oh my God, look at these 9 cards or 10 or 12 or 15, even
so
15.
Good.
And that's awesome. And they did a fantastic job of capturing kind of the essence of Final Fantasy. And it's resonated in such a huge way. It's reminded me why I love Final Fantasy. And I think it's reminded a lot of people why they love Final Fantasy. So that's why it's been such a big story throughout the year and why it's been so hard to find a lot of these cards and why they're selling for so much money. It's just Final Fantasy hits that is on a level. I think it's my favorite game series, maybe even more so than Pokemon. I really love Final Fantasy. Yeah.
I'm not going to go that far. I will say that like Final Fantasy, like my love has definitely been rekindled for this. Something weird about the MTG set. We were talking about it before. I had the weird notion of maybe I should play a bunch of the old Final Fantasies that I never got around to. Mm-hmm. This MTG set makes Final Fantasy II look like the most slapping, like excellent game ever.
Have
like,
a
all
cool
the art
design.
Is immaculate.
Like, art's
it's
immaculate.
So cool. Like the Wild Rose Rebellion card looks insane. It looks so good. And I sit there
it's
and I'm
cool.
like, no one ever talks about two. No one ever like shouts out two. But what if I played Final Fantasy II and became an FF2 sicko? That'd be crazy.
Infuriant
is so
cool.
If anyone's
going
to like it, it's you.
There's a lot of Final Fantasy came out of Final Fantasy II.
Yes. Final Fantasy is basically a prototype of Final Fantasy IV, which codified a whole lot. Our Dark Knights, we got our Dargoons,
so we got a lot to cover, so I'm not going to dwell too much more on Magic the Gathering, but other notable RPGs and some that I thought would be a lot bigger than they ultimately were, two of them were Monster Hunter Wilds and Elden Ring Nightreign, both of which so Monster Hunter Wilds is now at overwhelmingly negative, I think.
Yeah.
On Steam.
On Steam specifically.
What happened?
The optimization is terrible.
Really?
It's not good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I play it on PS5. I had no idea there was problems with the optimization.
It's a shame because it's a gorgeous looking game. It should be a gorgeous looking game, but on PC specifically, the lighting is really weird. Everything looks really washed out and just out of the gate, and people had stuttering issues too right out of the gate.
Yeah, you can't really
if
have
I recall
that with
correctly.
Monster Hunter. You gotta hunt clean.
But then also, they just haven't had a lot of content.
Mm-hmm.
at least to the extent that people were expecting. So
I will say it's interesting to compare the two, because I think for all the ways that Night Rain is kind of a roguelike and stuff like that, I think it also has a lot of similarities to Monster Hunter in the way that you specifically hunt Night Lords, like specific encounters and things like that. And so it's interesting to see what Night Rain has been doing, because I think there was a moment where people were going like, oh, you know, Night Rain's figured out, you know, everybody's kind of got it down, we're all rolling credits, we beat the final boss, it is what it is, it was a nice little thing. And then they just shadow drop the enhanced version of Gaping Jaw, and it's an incredible boss fight. It's a really sick boss fight that's really challenging even for three players, and it's got some really cool mechanics. And I was sitting there thinking about it, I was like, this is kind of the same cadence that Monster Hunter Wilds had. You know, Wilds was out for a little bit and then Mizutsune dropped. But Mizutsune, we hunted it for that one day, for that one stream, and then I haven't really gone back since. But Night Rain, I've been steadily putting in like a run a day pretty much, and it's been just really enjoyable to go in even with randoms and just do runs and just play that game randomly. And maybe it's a little bit of, I love that there's, okay, I have to take back something I said in the past. I love that there's no voice chat in Night Rain anymore, because I've been playing Rematch on the side, and Rematch is a fantastic video game that's not an RPG, so we can't really talk about it, but Rematch is really good. But it has voice chat, and maybe some of the most toxic voice chat I've heard in a long time, so that game's gonna stick. But Night Rain having no voice chat rules, because everyone just kind of has to gesture and put pings on the map to talk to each other, and that's the better form of human communication in a video game, honestly. Like, that works fine. Everybody kind of works together towards a common goal, you're all good. And the update, the community, like everything around it's been really, really solid. So like I would say that Wilds is kind of hitting under where we thought it would arrive, but I think Night Rain is doing better than I thought it would. And especially, it's weird seeing the critical reception initially to both. Wilds was like immediately one of the runaway successes of the year. Night Rain came in a little bit lower than you would expect a FromSoft game too. But personally, I probably am going to keep playing more Night Rain than I will of Wilds. I think I'm kind of done with Wilds until the next like really big meaty update. And Night Rain, I kind of enjoy just plucking away and learning the characters and building up my relic pool and stuff like that. So
yeah, I think there is more stuff coming for Monster Hunter though, isn't it? Like the update, title update two, I think it's called.
Yeah, they're supposed to be to U2 soon.
But Capcom usually doesn't mess up this badly with their, at least they haven't in a while. Like, how do they mess up the PC
port? I think Wilds is a good game. The PC port is a problem.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
The PC port, this is the first time that I can think of that Monster Hunter has gotten a PC port day and date with the release of a new game. And because with Wilds and World, the PC version came out later, if I recall correctly.
Right, you're right.
And so, and those were maybe better optimized. So this one was day and date with the console versions, and it hasn't been great, unfortunately.
They fix it.
As for the actual content, it's the same old song. I've played through three of these things now, and always there's the enhanced version, the giant expansion, the Iceborne
and then Sunbreak is what the
is
other
it called Iceborne
called for Rise. It's Iceborne.
I think it was Iceborne. Yeah.
World Iceborne. Yeah.
Wow, my brain is completely fried. Sunbreak and Iceborne.
Ours are too. It's okay.
Are where those games sang. Like Monster Hunter Worlds became special with Iceborne, and it some of the coolest fights I've ever done in a video game were in Iceborne. And I think that will be the case with Wilds as well. We'll get a huge expansion, and then in effect they'll be hitting the reset button. And it's like, well, okay, time to do all the Master Rank hunts now. And this is where the actual game is. So that's why I always like, a new Monster Hunter comes out, and I'm like, it's almost like I'm playing a demo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, so
Rise was pretty bad about that, wasn't it? The Switch one, didn't that like just not have an ending at first?
I loved Rise. I put a lot of time into Rise. And actually when it first came out, I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. Mm. And I did all the content in it, but there was always that kind of nagging feeling in the back of my head that I should just wait until the master rank stuff comes out.
I think it's a real bummer because I think Wilds has some of the better characters in the series, like an actually good cast around you that are people that have stories that you care about and stuff like that. Like the actual designs of the characters, even just the aesthetic, like the look of that game is so interesting and fun and really enjoyable. And I think that's kind of the bummer, is that every game nowadays, I feel like people jump in immediately, just engorge themselves on the content, and then go like, where's all the end game content, and then leave. And games like Final Fantasy 14 have been pretty good about trying to be like, hey, play our stuff, move on, come back, and things like that. But I don't know that Wilds has like given me a lot to want to come back to, I guess. I like the idea of hunting better monsters, but
the problem with Wilds is that a lot of these monsters are kind of trivial. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it's that I've gotten good or that I've played a lot of Monster Hunter or whatever. It's just really easy to put them on the ground and not let them get up and abuse all of the breakpoints and savage them in the span of like 15 minutes. The hunts actually go too fast, if anything. And so you do some hunts, you're like, well, that was fun. And then you move on with your life, as opposed to, okay, this is a 45-minute epic. And by the time you're done, you feel bruised and bloodied, but victorious. Instead, they're just focusing it on the grind.
If you want that, like, that's what Nightrain has, because some of those Nightlord bosses in Nightrain, like I finally beat the Sentient Pest the other day, who was kind of a little bit of a thorn in my side for a while. But it's a boss fight against two giant monsters. One is like a Mothra style moth that's like shooting lasers and dumping poison everywhere, and the other one is like this big, almost ant lion type thing that kind of crawls around on the ground and punches you and stuff like that. And it has all these cool mechanics about like, oh, the moth shoots out this giant rainstorm of lasers, and the ant lion kind of like covers itself with its shell to protect itself, so you have to actually run and get behind the other boss to protect yourself from it, things like that. And then they like Voltron together for the phase change, and now they're like moving together and fighting together, and there's like so much cool stuff. And I was playing that, and I think the moment when they Voltroned and started doing all this cool stuff, I was like, why? There's not a lot of fights in Monster Hunter Wilds that have something like this. There's the one where they do the big curl up, and then you have to get behind the snowbanks to like block yourself from the blast and all that. Yeah. But when I think of the Wilds like boss fights, like the big standout fights, they're all kind of just samey in my head. They don't have any big standout moments or really incredible, like you said,
there's some good
scraps
ones
where you're emerging like bloody and
honestly
bruised.
I loved Monster Hunter Wilds.
Monsters, I don't know that the actual fights have anything cool happening.
There's nothing on the level of the Nergigante from Monster Hunter World, which as a fight is just an epic. It's so much fun. And that was in the base game.
Well, what we need to do is once they bring in the update, just start playing again. Because that's the first Monster Hunter I really got into and like finished all the story content stuff.
Well, I think it brought in a lot of new fans.
I think it brought in a lot of new fans.
Yeah. The good news is that a Capcom Spotlight has been announced for June 26th, and there will be updates on Monster Hunter Wilds among them. So hopefully we get a bunch of like pretty solid endgame content that we can kind of sink our teeth into, our swords, whatever.
Maybe we'll get some Mega Man
news as we head into the back half of the year. A couple other notable RPGs. Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 came out this year, and it was kind of juxtaposed against the remaster of Oblivion.
Yeah.
And Oblivion has been really interesting because it was a shadow drop. It immediately got a lot of people playing and appreciating it again. But this was definitely a game that had a lot of performance issues across the board. Talk about a game that's not like particularly well optimized. So a lot of people were kind of complaining about that one. But Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 definitely has picked up its own fan base. And I think that it's going to be in the conversation for a lot of end game end of the year awards Certainly for best RPG. You don't think so, Eric? You're like making faces at me right now.
I'm questionable, and it has nothing to do with KCD2. From what I've heard, it's a really interesting, fun, enjoyable game that does some really cool stuff. I just don't know that people have a long enough memory to care about a game that is not embedded in the mainstream. Pick like some giant franchise, like a Final Fantasy or a Naughty Dog game or something like that, right? I think people might have long enough memories to remember it come Game Awards time and all that. But I think KCD2 launched so early and there were so many other games that suddenly just sucked all the oxygen out of the room within the next like 2-3 months, that even though it's a really good game that has a sizable legion of defenders, I'm worried that the general consensus memory is not going to remember it when it's October, November, you know?
We'll see. Back to Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which came out last February 2024. And I think it actually got a bump at the end of the year because it came back into focus with the end of the year awards. And everybody went, oh, yeah, I liked Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And then it got the PC version, and that helped it kind of pick up momentum from my viewpoint. So,
yeah.
Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, I think, could end up in a similar situation where everybody starts looking back at the games that came out and they're like, oh, yeah, Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 came out. Yeah, that was a really good game. All right, yeah, we'll put it into RPG category. I don't think it'll beat Expedition 33, but I think it'll be in the conversation.
I agree with CJ in the chat saying that like a major content update timed around that would probably be something that
there's an
that
expansion that just came out actually. Yeah. There was a new quest that came out just recently. But on that note, and I think we know the answer to this, what is our RPG of the year so far?
I know you're all going to say Clair Obscur, and I say sure, but I'm going to go with Fantasy Life Eye. I've just invested so much time into it.
We should talk about Fantasy Life Eye.
It just felt good.
It's a good game.
And if you want to talk about a game that looked like, oh god, this is going to be a disaster area from day one, it brought back Level 5. And Level 5 deserves to come back. It's one of the veterans of the genre. And I'm glad they proved themselves. I'm glad that someday we're going to get something. But Jason Schreier, if you're listening, please get on NFNA. I want to know what happened. There's got to be some some tea that I got to drink this. I got to drink it scalding hot.
Yeah, I agree that if we're talking about games that surprised this year, Fantasy Life Eye is absolutely up there. It should have been a train wreck by all, you know, considerations, but instead it's this really surprising success story, and now they're announcing a roguelike mode, and they're even like rolling out DLC very fast because they're like, oh, people like this, people enjoyed it. But yeah, mm-hmm. it's really sticking in a way that I think people have wanted for a while. It also helps that it's got a really good Switch 2 patch, and I think I've been kind of keeping an eye on the Switch 2 eShop to see, you know, what goes up and down, and routinely, like, top seller is always Mario Kart, right? Deltarune hangs around in the top charts pretty well, doesn't surprise me too much. But then, and by the way, Deltarune chapters 3 and 4, we didn't talk about it, very good, very very good.
I've heard great things.
I really enjoyed them, especially chapter 4. But then Fantasy Life Eye is like hanging in the top 5. It's doing very well. And so I love to see that because I think it's a really, really fascinating, interesting game that really fits the Switch 2 profile very well.
It's a great Switch 2 game. Yeah.
I've routinely thought about, I bought it on Steam because I was like, I don't want to play it on Switch. It won't run well on Switch. And I was kind of right about that. But then the Switch 2 version came out and I was like, dang it. Yeah. I should have waited. But I think when it comes to my actual favorite RPG of the year, it's Clair Obscur. I can't deny it. I can't run from the truth. Clair Obscur is absolutely amazing. It's so well made. The performances are incredible. The battle system's incredible. The aesthetic, like the art style and design of the world, I love how dreamlike it is, mm-hmm. how strange and surreal all of it is. It also just feels, we talk all the time about mature stories in games, and it drives me up the wall because apparently people are just like, oh yeah, mature stories, that just means we like shoot people a lot and stuff. And that's usually about it, because video games can really only do violence and get away with it. But it's an actually mature story because there are characters who are older, who deal with very real issues, who have genuine conversations with one another. There's moments of levity and jokes. There's Eskie and Monaco and stuff like that. But there's also really heavy moments where they talk about very honest, real things. And I think when we talk about mature storytelling in video games, like Clair Obscur should be the example, not like Grand Theft Auto.
it helps that they're adults and yes. have adult problems. Like, should I have a child during the apocalypse? This is a real mm-hmm. question that I'm asking myself.
That was asked in FF6 too as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, my RPG of the year is Magic the Gathering, LOL. No, just kidding. Expedition 33 is definitely the best new RPG that I've played this year. And it's up there, I think. And I think we'll be talking about it in the years to come, maybe in the same breath that we've been talking about, say, Disco Elysium, another RPG that was really thoughtful, that came out kind of out of nowhere from an indie studio. And it's going to establish itself as a new franchise. There's going to be more Expeditions 33. There's going to be a movie, I guess.
33 and a half.
Among other things. We're going to see new content. Probably there's going to be an expansion. Maybe it will be a sequel. And Sandfall Interactive has established itself as a studio to watch in the RPG space. And undoubtedly, whatever their next thing is going to be a big deal. Like I said, I think the biggest thing for me is Expedition 33 hitting with the mainstream, despite the fact that it was in essence, a turn-based tactics, very linear RPG. And maybe that's because it had that AAA vibe of almost a Last of Us kind of feel of the way it had the over-the-shoulder camera, third person running through the world and everything. Maybe it's because of the action feel of doing the turn-based systems, the way that it hits really hard. Maybe it's because of its a mature adult prestige TV themes, or that it's just really pretty to look at. But it really grabs you. It really grabbed me after the end of Act One, and it kept getting better, I felt. And it pulled the rug out from under me with a couple of really big twists that I really enjoyed. It's one of the more surprising and enjoyable RPGs that I've played in a while. So I think as of right now, in June 2025, Expedition 33 would be my RPG of the year. Okay, it's time to look ahead to what's coming up the rest of the year. Here are some of the big RPGs that are coming out in the rest of 2025. Final Fantasy Tactics Remaster is coming out later this year. We're also getting Demon School, which has been in the works for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one to watch. We've already had a Trails game this year. We're getting another one. It's Trails in the Sky First, which is a full-blown remake of Legend of the Hero Trails in the Sky. By the way, as I already mentioned, we're playing SC at the moment. Witchbrook is coming out this year, finally.
Yes.
I'm excited about that one. Hades 2 is coming out this year.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed the early access on that one. And finally, and maybe the one that'll sell better than any of these, Pokemon Legends Zaw. Wah. Wah. What is our most anticipated RPG for the rest of 2025, Nadia? Is it Pokemon Legends Zaw?
Criminal Justice says we are required by law to call Donkey Kong Bonanza an RPG. You see what I've started here?
Bonanza.
Bonanza. There we go. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's Italian.
There's a lot here that we have talked about how there's the latter half of the year is looking a bit like just an open pit, and anything can happen. Like, there could be a surprise
anything
hit game. Anything. You kidding me? This anything. World? Anything. But as for my most anticipated, I don't know. I feel like Hades 2, I could say sure, maybe, but there's so much potential, so much untapped potential because of the Switch 2 that I feel like anything can happen. As it is, I'm just having a good time, as I said, playing my backlog. So heck, count that. Just like playing my backlog. making good time out of games that I already had and couldn't play because they ran like crap on the Switch. This is where technology is now.
Eric?
I think Demon's School. I'm really, really looking forward to Demon's School. It's been delayed a few times, pushed back, and this is a game that just seems to speak to everything I enjoy in video games. It's a kind of, you know, life sim management type game on one end and a tactics RPG on the other. It's got incredible visual stylings. It's got really interesting tactical combat systems that harken to the ideas of Valkyria Chronicles or Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor, or even something like Into the Breach or Frozen Synapse, if anyone remembers that game besides me. It's some really, really cool stuff that I think could be just really good for the sickos out there. You know who you are. I think for everybody else, Trails in the Sky First, I really do want to see that game remade. I've tried playing the first one a couple times. I do genuinely want to sit down and play Trails FC front to back at some point. I wish it was on Switch. Like, why? I know they're making the remake and the remake's going to be on Switch and Switch 2, but it's kind of crazy that we don't have like the Estelle arc on Switch, just the way that all the Final Fantasy games are on Switch. So in lieu of that, I think Trails First will be a really cool way to finally engage with that classic RPG that everyone seems to keep telling us to talk more about.
Trails. At some point, we're just going to have... I almost feel like we're just going to go on a quest where we play as much Trails as possible in order to... If nothing else...
Godspeed.
What would be the arc? No, right. I forgot. We have to play all of them. Starting from the beginning. It's like... It's reading like epic fantasy. I mean, we're playing Trails in the Sky SC. So if we play third, then we can move on to Cold Steel. And then we're fighting
the water wars of like 2045, we'll still be playing Doom Trails games from like this year.
Man, I'm arming myself for those water wars. I live right beside a lake full of the good stuff. You ain't getting it.
Nadia's camping already.
I'm a warlord in making here.
You saw that storm coming in, you said I'm gonna camp this house.
Looks like there's a storm coming.
I'm really excited for Witchbrook. And I'm also really excited for Pokemon Legend Zaw.
Zaw! So,
I think Pokemon Legend Zaw is the game that I'm looking forward to most in the second half of the year. I think the Pokemon Legends Arceus was excellent. And I'm excited to see them cook with... But Arceus was almost a prototype. So I'm excited to see them cook with a much fuller, fleshed out version of the game. And I think it'll run really well on the Switch too and look really good. I mean, look really good in relative terms. So,
I don't know if this is true, but I thought I heard that Game Freak thought the Switch was going to flop, so they didn't really commit themselves to working really hard on the Switch, and they didn't really get hold of the hardware as well. Maybe it's better with Switch 2. I mean, Scarvi is really upgraded really nicely, aside from some stuff that can't be fixed.
Well, that's a weird idea, because no offense, Nadia, but the reason I say that is... we knew by 2017, 2018 that the Switch was a hit. And Scarvi came out in 2022.
Oh, I know. It feels like something went wrong. COVID
so they definitely had some time to realize that the Switch was okay. But the pandemic was the thing.
Yeah.
We're still feeling the effects of it now.
Yeah.
The pandemic changed everything. It's still impacting games now.
Absolutely.
And I think Pokemon was hit really hard. Mm-hmm. By the pandemic, actually. And I'm not making excuses for them. I'm just saying that.
No, absolutely.
It's just,
you're right.
I think a reality. So if a lot of games kind of came out with weird issues, maybe that was one of the big reasons. So, but I do think that there's no excuses with Gen 10. That it has to be good.
Yeah, I agree.
I do think the Switch 2, like early impressions, and we'll talk more about this in the tavern, I'm sure, but... Already, I'm so much more impressed with the hardware capabilities of the Switch 2 that I'm less concerned about Zaw being a train wreck this time around. I was going into like pre-Switch 2 launch, I was like, I don't know, Z through A looks cool, but all of the stuff we've seen so far, I just don't know. It doesn't seem like it's going to run any better. In fact, it might run worse because they're in such denser areas and things like that. And then Switch 2 comes out, and the way that those games run on the Switch 2 is night and day. Like, mm-hmm. Again, we'll save that for the tavern, but I'm so much more confident in ZA actually being not just something that people kind of like shove down their throat like a chicken bone because they want their Pokemon fix, but like it's like, oh, this might actually be kind of solid, this might be decent. So yeah,
I was hoping that there would be some interesting Nintendo announcements in June, but it's now kind of looking like a Direct might not happen now that Donkey Kong Bonanza has happened, and it's all quiet in the Whisper Network with when it comes to Nintendo Direct. So we might just have to wait until August to see if anything happens, if Nintendo ends up surprising us with any more RPGs. I wouldn't mind that Fire Emblem remake that's been teased for, well, it's been rumored for years.
What I'd about, love to see it. Imagine if we get a Metroid Prime 4 Shadow Drop, like you heard what happened in the London Tube, right?
I think that was a mistake. I don't think, that meant that was anything.
So funny.
I do like the edits that are like out question mark no exclamation mark.
That's not coming out until the fall.
I don't know.
Metroid Prime 4 is definitely up there as
if
one of my most anticipated
if it's got a
games.
Peggy rating, like, can't be
Peggy,
like
13
too far away, and it does have a 13.
Do you think they're ever going to let Peggy grow up?
Yeah, no, she's for too long. August,
Peggy's always
August
been
or 13. September.
She's been 18 for a long time.
Y'all, I'm going to be playing a lot of Silk Song in September. That's going to be the game that's going to be taking over a lot of my life, I think.
When's that dropping?
Silk Song looks good.
September, yeah. Probably. I mean, that's the rumor. I mean, Xbox said it's coming out this year when they said that they're putting out their new handheld.
That's true. They did kind of advertise it front and center there.
The Xbox Ally in June. You love to see it. So happy.
I love to see it. Yeah, I like my Switch 2 a lot. I'm kind of waiting on more games to play on it, but Donkey Kong Bonanza is definitely going to be one that I'll be picking up. And then
I'm so stoked for Bonanza. Baby Pauline is so cute. Look at her little freckles.
Adorable.
Her clothes are too big. What's she doing? Oh, Pauline, what are you doing in that deep, dark underground? You silly, silly woman, girl. Donkey Kong's adorable, though. Just the way
it's so
funny.
And he's like and is playing the music. It's so perfectly calibrated for Japanese audiences with the musical aspect as well. It's going to be a big deal.
Oh, I can't wait.
I think
wait.
Nintendo's doing it. I think they're rebooting Donkey Kong. I was like, are they going to be able to reboot Donkey Kong? The answer is yes, they are going to be able to.
I'm curious to see what they're doing because there's some signs that maybe they're not. But we'll see. It looks really cute and I'm really excited for it. And it's not too far away. Right?
We're not away at all.
None of us are the people who care about Donkey Kong canon, right?
No. But my husband can be a pill sometimes.
Okay, we need to have a talk then. Because, like, it's Donkey Kong. All right, it's Donkey Kong. That's we don't need to do this over Donkey Kong. We don't need to do this over Star Wars. But
sometimes,
we definitely don't need to do this over Donkey
Kong.
Sometimes
things can be an anthology. I come from the time when nobody really linked media. Nobody really tried that hard to do it the way they do now. Like, everything now is crossover, 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 canon, lore. People need to calm down a bit. As someone who loves stories, just...
The Mario timeline. This is
here he woohooed.
There's a
split and here he
in Odyssey. Yeah, yeah.
Here's where he killed a monkey. Here's where he killed a turtle. Choose your timeline.
I do like. I think I mentioned this on. I was on the GI show or something recently, but there's the Zelda timeline where they kind of tried to lay it all out, and then immediately were just like, "Oh, it actually doesn't matter."
That's a disaster area.
Because they did Breath of the Wild and then Tears of the Kingdom. And I remember at the time people were like, hey, why aren't there guardians in Tears of the Kingdom? Because there should be like some amount of guardian tech or other things laying around. And they were just like, didn't seem like it was really going to work for what we were doing.
Why is Link recollecting all this old stuff? Mega Man rules.
Yeah, yeah. No, that kind of owns.
I talked to Eiji Aonuma a couple years ago.
Oh, dish.
And I put this idea to him, and he kind of agreed that The Legend of Zelda is best understood if you imagine yourself as the modern audience looking back through lore and legends and the stories that have been passed down through ages, and they don't always connect up, and the details differ, but so it's not a coherent... here's, and then the next thing happened, and then the next thing happened. It's not the MCU. And that's
no,
fine.
It's not like,
no, it's
like
the Epic of Gilgamesh.
It's the legend of Zelda. Yeah. It's a legend. It's like,
when you tell a fairy tale, like the tale of Snow White, it's going to be very different from telling to telling, but it's still the same idea. Like Zelda's kind of the same way. And they make, there's like occasional cute references to their own canon, like in Link Between Worlds, which needs to come to Switch 2. You can find a piece of like trivia where a guards person will tell you, oh, Zelda in that game, there's a mural in the castle of like, you get the impression that it's linked to the past Link and Zelda. And she just stares at it because she's just so enamored about the romance of it all, which is actually really cute.
What's your favorite RPG of the year so far, dear listener? Is it Expedition 33 or is it something else? Come discuss with us over on the Discord or hit me up on email at cat@blugoutpod.com or send a letter through the mailbag. We want to hear from you. As for one more thing before we move on, if you want to listen to some of the best of Blood God from 2025 so far, check out our 500th episode, which came out earlier this year, where we listed the 10 best RPGs of the past 10 years. You might be surprised by the results. Also, check out our review of Frieren. We watched the whole thing, and we decided if it was going to be in the pantheon, the anime. That was one of our side quests. And we did a PS2 draft. That was so fun, too. That was another side quest that we did. And we reviewed Expedition 33, among other games, earlier this year. So lots of great content that has been on Blood God. It's one of my favorite years of Blood God so far. I feel it's like this podcast gets better every year.
I agree. And
we're just on an upward trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
up, and up. And up.
Drink up.
All right. That's it for 2025 in review. It's time now for a series of random encounters. A 40-minute Capcom Spotlight has been announced for June 26th with updates on Monster Hunter Wilds, among other games. Sega has revealed sales for numerous games, with Metaphor selling 2 million, Like a Dragon selling 2.8 million, SMT5 selling 2.1 million, P3 Reload selling around 2 million, Infinite Well selling 1.6 million, and Persona 5 Royal selling a cool 7.2 million copies, which would likely put the entire series of Persona 5 over the 10 million mark. Really impressive. But the thing that surprised me, actually, and maybe we can talk about this in the tavern, is SMT5 selling as well as it did. I did not think it did that well, but it turns out that it did. Persona 4 Revival and Stranger Than Heaven, meanwhile, won't be out until at least April 2026. So we got a while to wait. Stranger Than Heaven, by the way, is one of my most anticipated games of the next couple of years. That game looks sick. Magic Fest is currently being held in Las Vegas, and among other things, WotC revealed the first Avatar The Last Airbender card. It's Aang, the Master of Elements. It's really cool. The art on it is sick. They're going to do a whole set. I'm in danger of making a Korra deck. It's going to be a pre-con, I'm sure, that I'll end up upgrading or something. I'm going to try and resist, but it's just going to end up happening. Somehow a Korra deck is going to end up finding its way into my collection.
It's happening.
Even though I'm not that big of an Avatar fan, it's still going to... I can't resist.
Tiny Domino, Eric joins Axe of the Blood God. Big Domino, Cat goes bankrupt on making a Korra deck.
An Elden Ring Night Rain update has Shadow Drop, featuring weekly limited time bosses called Everdark Sovereigns. Pretty cool, actually. Hades 2 has received a fresh early access update as it gets closer to its final release date. In one of the few times that this series will ever be mentioned on Axe the Blood God, Battlefield 2042 is getting a Mass Effect bundle. Includes N7 themed skins and various cosmetics. It's very weird. And finally, apparently Final Fantasy Tactics is being remade by sheer force. The original source code is no longer exists, according to Kazutoyo Mihiro. It also won't include new content from War of the Lions, so no Baltier, no Lusso, no Onion Knights, and no Dark Knight. Baltier, why? No, so sad.
Baltier, no, alas. Come back.
Eric, you looked like you wanted to say something about this Battlefield 2042 Mass Effect bundle.
I guess you would.
Y'all are familiar with SpongeBob SquarePants, correct?
Of course.
Yes.
The episode with Smitty Werber, Yeagerman Jensen, where Mr. Krabs goes to the graveyard to find the grave of Smitty Werber, Yeagerman Jensen, and is like, am I really going to defile this grave for money? Of course I am, and pulls out a shovel. You know, that's just something I thought of when I saw that Battlefield 2042 was getting a Mass Effect update. kind of crazy for them to cash in on BioWare love and nostalgia after every single thing that has happened with BioWare over the last, let's say, 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, that's a little crazy.
That team, that crew deserves better, and I think Mass Effect deserves better than just being turned into nostalgia content in a game that nobody plays anymore because the new Battlefield is like in development. Like nobody plays.
People like 2042. They do.
It's kind of frustrating.
It's a lot
the
better
way...
than it used to be.
that's what people say about their favorite games all the time is, oh, it's better than it used to be. It's upward trajectory.
It's just kind of sad when something like, for example, Mass Effect, it's like, you can have new content? No, we'll just rip it apart for nostalgia slop. And there is a difference between, you know, okay, cool, this is good nostalgic content. This is really healthy and good, and this is just slop. Like, I've complained about Power Rangers in the past, just the way that Hasbro took a perfectly good, actually popular franchise and killed it, turned into a golden goose, make it like a Gen 1 like vomit machine. Like, hey, kids, you remember Tommy the Green Ranger? Well, he's dead now. We're not going to tell you that. But this one's in jail. This one's I don't know. It's just,
I think the Final Fantasy Magic the Gathering set has just made me much more aware of the fact that so much stuff is content slurry at the end of the day. So much like crossover content is just nostalgia, hey, do you remember this slurry?
Yeah.
And so when something shows up and actually has like some level of reverence and has been like adapted well, it just stands out all the more and then makes all those other times where they're just like, yeah, do you want your AK-47 to look like a Mass Effect gun? Here you go. Pay $5 or whatever. Like, I don't care. I'm so done. We don't need this in our lives anymore.
Yay.
And Battlefield certainly shouldn't try to be Fortnite. Like, it can't be. It never will
this
be.
Is just, well, it will be. The next Battlefield
they'll
will
try.
Be Fortnite. Yeah. What? Final Fantasy is in Battlefield? What the heck? I don't even know. EA is always, they're not good at coming up with new things, but they are really good at chasing trends and then doing them kind of badly. And they are really good at making money. Those are the two things that EA is really good at. And I mean, EA is a graveyard of amazing franchises from Ultima to Wing Commander. And Mass Effect and BioWare is there with them too. Do you remember the meme?
Yeah. Keep popping EA. Where are we going? That one? And he looks over the cliff and he sees Maxis. And what the? That was so long ago. It's so much bigger now. The pile of bodies.
Yeah, I mean,
really
Command and Conquer is dead and buried over there. It's terrible.
Man, that's, what a great franchise.
So many of my favorite games. And they're
Medal of
sports
Honor,
games,
you know,
too.
No,
it's
that's
pretty
Activision.
Incredible, actually. Yeah. They ruined a lot of my favorite things, EA did. But
I'll do that.
Yeah,
thanks, EA.
They do be like that. But I want to talk about Final Fantasy Tactics. Surprising to hear, I guess not surprising to hear that the original source code literally does not exist. I'm curious what they mean by being remade by sheer force. So they're just, does that mean that they're making new assets and just starting over from scratch? Is that what this remake is? That's crazy if it
is. I don't know. It's like there's so many assets already preserved on the internet. I wonder if they're using any of those. But yeah, I would think that so much source code just gone from that era. We forget how much, like, even text can take up a lot of space on, say, like a diskette and stuff like that cost money in the day. And you think, well, you would think, oh my God, of course they preserve that. But at the time, you just don't think about it. It's just, oh, well, this is a job. It's, you know, why would I ever want to see this again? Why would I ever want to use this again? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a bummer because I think, you know, thinking back to Command and Conquer just now, what we were talking about when Petroglyph was going back to re-release the original Command and Conquer for the collection, there's a lot of talk about preservation. And luckily for that series, there was a lot of preservation around the original Command and Conquer and the original Red Alert. But for a lot of game series, there's just a lot of lost media. There's a lot of code that's out there that just maybe got shoved in a drawer, maybe is on a device or a hard drive that doesn't spin up anymore or something like that. There's a lot of like valid questions about how we preserve media going forward, especially when there's so much of it and we don't really have built-in solid curation tools for that stuff right now. And people
anymore.
People are out there trying. There are a lot of efforts out there to preserve games media, games themselves, like all kinds of history foundations and things like that. But it's something that I would like to see there be a broader support of, not just from like, you know, independent ventures, but even, I don't know, IMO. I think like art preservation should be part of the common good and the common shared
absolutely.
Good. And it'd be great if my tax money went towards that instead of other things, but
it's common culture for sure.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, it's crucial. And I think this is just another reminder of it.
They were saying in the interview, you know, back in those days, there was no, quote, there was no such thing as online patches or updates. So unless there was any major reason to do something different, once you'd made the game, that was it.
Yeah, it was done.
And it almost sounded like it was the equivalent of somebody having a VCR, like a videotape. Sorry, this is old references for people.
I understand.
Having a videotape and taping over it for like a VCR. And, you know, just like, well, we overwrote the source code. We didn't need it anymore. Well, why would we need the game's out there. We made it.
I watched Spotlight again the other night because I felt like watching it. And really, really good movie, by the way. Full of dudes. Incredible dudes.
So many dudes.
Yeah. There's so many dudes in Spotlight. You got
all
Mark Ruffalo, you got Michael Keaton, you got Liev Schreiber, Stanley Tucci. That's a great dude lineup. But
lineup.
There's a part of that movie where they're looking for clips and like old newspaper clippings and stories and stuff like that. And they're going through the microfilm reels and they're putting in these like big baskets of just like saved archival clips and things like that. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is literally like such a strange thing to see nowadays. You know, we're only two decades removed from this and that still feels like an antiquity. But it's also like how you preserve so much of that stuff, because so often people will kind of look at that stuff and be like, why would we ever need this, you know, years later? It turns out, oh, that stuff is actually very important to maintain and hold on to. So yeah, it matters. It all matters.
The way that they managed to reconstruct this, according to the interview, we analyzed a number of existing versions of the game and reconstructed the programming of the original. But there are also times when we played the original game and worked it out by feel alone. The entire process was a result of cumulative hard work. On the one hand, working to implement new features, while behind the scenes, our work was similar to porting an old arcade game to the NES. That's really incredible and really kind of explains why Final Fantasy Tactics took so long to come back to other things, is that it just was actually a really big endeavor to make this happen. And frankly, I'm really glad that it did. So yay.
They also had Studio 3 on it. You know, they haven't been super busy for the last couple years or anything like that, you know.
Chris, they're the Final Fantasy 14 ones,
yeah, they're
right?
The 14 guys.
14 and 16.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They definitely haven't been super busy for the last like 3 to 5 years.
Who's the producer of 16 again and 14?
Yoshida.
Are you talking about Yoshida?
Do you think this was a Yoshida thing? Is Yoshida was like, you know what? We need a Tactics remake.
He's friends with Matsuno. So I can absolutely see them.
Yeah. Maybe they were just having beers somewhere and they're like, maybe we should just remake Tactics. I can make it happen.
That is actually why that's why Yo-Kai Watch is in Final Fantasy 14, by the way. Every so often you get the Yo-Kai Watch event that pops up, and apparently what's the name of the president of level 5, Asuno, I think, is best friends or good friends with Yoshi-P, and every so often you get together, have beers, and like, yeah, let's do the Yokai Watch thing again.
We need the Fantasy Life crossover then, so we can get Bone Dragon Mount in Final Fantasy 14.
I can see that happening. I anticipate the day.
Anticipate the day. I want to talk about Sega numbers really quickly. SMT5, pretty successful. I didn't think that it sold 2 million. These numbers have been out before, so I don't think they're anything new, but...
Was this...
People like Shin Megami Tensei, it turns out.
Did this include the Vengeance version that came out? Because...
Seemingly, yes. Yes.
Because, yeah, it's a great game. I mean, it was good on the Switch, but it's... The Vengeance upgrade is absolutely excellent, and I recommend it to anybody. I would actually love to go back to it if I had the time and finish that off. It has a great atmosphere. They added a lot to the demons, I find, to make them more personable, so to speak. Make them more easy to kind of interact with and have fun with and talk to, and you have fun conversations with them. I think that's more the persona angle, not that they're trying to get you to like date the demons, although they should. They're just trying to get you to warm up to characters the way you can in Persona. And it's just a great game.
My takeaway from these numbers is that Sega is not a company that is thinking in terms of, look, this game has to sell 30 million copies or it's a flop.
No, it's all slow burn. It's very smart.
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit, they're like, sold over a million? Poggers. Like, wow.
We'll make a game that sells 2 to 3
that
million.
That was in the financial report.
That was poggers. We sold over a million.
This sold over a million poggers.
It's a good number. Like, if you just have those steady, like, obviously Persona can be a very high budget game. I think Persona 5 probably cost a pretty penny to make, but stuff like the Persona remakes and the stuff like that, obviously even the Persona stuff isn't like, holy shit, AAA, blow out the budget. It's just good. Sega and Atlas are just making good games that people want to play, and you're reusing a lot of assets. Yeah, like with Yakuza in particular, but the games are selling.
But that's just good game development practice. It's what people did in the past, too. I mean, come on. It's tale as old time.
You don't have to make a game thinking, you know, oh my God, I got to sell 30 million. That'll never get you anywhere. But people have to be satisfied with the idea that, oh, wow, 1 or 2 million, that's great sales. But companies are not willing to be happy about that. Got
to
be
I think it's hard to manufacture a hit that's going to sell 30 million. And that's where Final Fantasy keeps going. They're trying to make a game that's going to sell 30 million copies, and then they get a game that sells 8 million copies, and they're very disappointed with that because they spent a lot of money on it. I think that Sega's strategy, and maybe it's a sound one, is they make these games that are kind of critically acclaimed, that have established fan bases, and then they go out there and they make concert series and anime and toys and all kinds of other merch and just spin them into their own thing and let them kind of cook, and they make them on a decent budget and they put them out once every couple years. And the way that they approach Yakuza in particular reminds me of when Konami was putting out a Castlevania game every year or so, or every 2 years.
Yeah, those were good games.
And they're selling a couple million a piece. Like, a Dragon sold almost 3 million. Like, Infinite Wealth sold like 1.6 million. That's good, you know? I'm sure Sega's like, yeah, cool. Just keep chugging along, putting these games out. They have their fan base. We know they're going to do well. It's like a little bit of cost certainty, right?
I think it's notable that in that lineup, though, we don't see, you know, like a Dragon Gaiden. We don't see like a Dragon
Ishin. Less than a million.
Right. We don't see Ishin. We don't see Pirate Yakuza yet, although that's fairly new.
I think the spinoffs aren't doing as well as the main versions.
Yes.
Probably not.
And strangely, oddly enough, I think especially for the people, you know, making these games and for Sega, the RPGs are doing better. And that's funny, but
that's
also
genre.
Like, yeah, it's really like proving itself in that fact, too.
The next game that's coming out, though, the one that's set in 1940s Japan, I am looking forward to that. Like, when I see Yakuza, I'm like, oh, cool, but like, this is such a good idea.
Stranger Than Heaven?
Stranger Than Heaven, yeah.
Stranger Than Heaven.
That game looks awesome. Ugh. Can't wait to play it. I say this, I want to play Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii, too, actually.
I want to play that.
I have this giant backlog of, someday I'm just going to sit down I'm going to put the magic cards away, and I'm going to play as many Yakuza games as I can.
No,
you sound like an old warrior. Like, one day I'll put up the axe. I'll be done with my great, you know, my battles. Eventually I'll retire.
I'm done with my battles. I'll diggy hole.
I'm only 2 weeks away from my pension.
I want to play I'm going to finish a Yakuza game. I swear to God, I always get halfway through them.
A Yakuza game?
No.
Catherine Beery, go play Yakuza 0 right now.
You're
exiled from this podcast until you come back and show that you've completed Yakuza 0. I got to the end of Yakuza 0.
I got really far in Yakuza 7, and I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I think that the furthest I've ever gotten in Yakuza is definitely Like a Dragon. The original Like a Dragon. So
yeah, my husband downloaded Yakuza 0, and it's really good. Like, the story immediately just pulls you right in. It's ridiculous how much fun it is. But it's a matter of, well, I gotta have time to play it, because goddamn, Mario Kart's right there, and those people aren't killing themselves. God, those rallies just pep me up.
Meanwhile, Persona 5 Royal, it's on like every platform now, so it's really easy to get. But people really love themselves some Persona 5. That series is kind of a big deal.
It hit.
I think it's one of those games for a lot of people. It was like such a pivotal game that formed your personality. For mine, it was like Final Fantasy VI, so the children must learn.
It's one of the most important RPGs to be released in the last 10 years. It absolutely is.
Stylistically, it was huge. I mean, you can see the influence of it even on Clair Obscur, the way the interfaces and the menus come in and stuff like that. I'm also just going to be real honest, and I'm sorry to all those who this is accurate to, but there, every once in a while, certain games come out and they form a generation's personality. It just happens.
Undertale?
It's what happens. I think Persona 5 and Undertale both came out at just the right time to completely become one generation's entire personality.
So younger millennials?
Even like Gen... Would it be? It'd be the Zoomers, right?
I wouldn't say Gen Z.
It's not Gen Alpha. Oh, but Gen Z would have been playing it.
I think it was your cohort, Eric. The people
no,
because
I
there.
Was like, how old was I in 2017? I was like mid to late 20s. I'm talking about like people who played this when they were teenagers. The way Final Fantasy X when I was young, and it imprinted on me. Like, that just happens. And I think for a certain
time, so the Zoomers played P5 growing up, and now they love it.
Now they're all cool.
And they discovered what
they're all
Tokyo
play Genshin.
Is.
They all play Genshin
discovered what
too.
Tokyo is.
Yeah, they found out that Tokyo is a real place.
Wow, yeah. Shibuya exists.
I mean, anime defined an entire generation, multiple generations now. So, and when I say an entire generation, I mean a certain generation of nerds. So,
nerds.
Do you want my cursed prediction? We've been through the rotation of like
prediction.
So we went through the rotation of like comics were the big thing that everybody can make money off of, and now video games and those properties are things that everybody can make money off of. Anime is next. We're gonna see anime.
Don't tell me there's like
gutted.
More live action anime adaptations coming. No more Dragon Ball.
Those
please.
Have been happening for a while.
I mean, that's already happening.
True.
One Piece got turned into a live action Netflix show.
Mass, I don't think I could take it.
Yeah.
But I think we're gonna
These
see
really
an
terrible
escalation.
Live action anime. God, they look so bad.
I mean, One Piece was not.
Ugh.
Awful. I prefer the anime, but I don't think One Piece was that bad. And also, Death Note was terrible, but it was so terrible it's actually fantastic.
It
Death Note
me
is
of
like
those
the
live
worst
action
movie.
Japanese
so
movies that were coming out in the mid 2000s around Death Note and whatnot. That's
Criminal
what
Justice,
Netflix is doing.
CJ, they never made Cowboy Bebop. You're lying. There's no such thing as live action Cowboy Bebop. That
I
didn't
actually
happen.
Saw the live action Death Note movie, like the Japanese one, in theaters. Like they had shows in Toronto. And they were fun. There was a lot of fun to attend. I had the Iron Chef as Light's father.
All right, before we move on from the tavern, Nadia, you've been playing a lot of Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, and every so often you just pop up in our chat and go, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet's really good. I love this game now. Tell me about it.
Gosh, it's just, I feel like it would have been more successful if maybe they had gone open zone versus open world.
Mm.
There are certain aspects of Pokemon that just don't serve, that just aren't great for an open world. But otherwise, like once you get the production, the game working at that solid 60 frames per second, it's just like, wow, I really like what they've done here. The fact that you don't have a certain path, like, they tell you, okay, it's actually funny when you're going off on your journey, you have three people bugging you. Okay, you're going to help me, you're going to help me, you're going to help me. and you have to choose what path you're going to go down. Eventually you can follow, you can just kind of complete them all. But you have, of course, your victory road, which is your gym battle, the standard Pokemon quest. But you also have your Titan quest, which is kind of pairs you up with, is it Arvin or Alvin? I don't know which
Arvin.
One.
Arvin.
He's a great character. Like, I love those quests in particular. Those, you fight against, like, giant Pokemon. And then the third one is Team Star. Like I said, the Mormon Pokemon company, who are people who are, like, going around trying to recruit
Mormon
students.
Company?
Well, I said they were Mormons at first because, like, they look very well-dressed, but they're just delinquents like Team Skull who are well-dressed.
They're wearing, like, Mad Max clothes, Nadia. What are you talking about?
I'm sorry. No, the ones at school were wearing nice button-up. Maybe because they were like,
yeah, because they're in school.
But the point is, Team Star doesn't like school. They said school's for losers. Prez says school's for losers. So their whole thing is like, I hate school. And you have to find out what their freaking deal is, because they have a whole thing going on. Like you said, they're Team Skull. And don't forget, Team Skull had that meth lab in the middle of Pokemon.
Yes.
I love Team Skull. Team Skull is still my favorite to this date. So Team Star, I'm looking forward to seeing what more they can get into, more shenanigans. And yeah, it's just a lot of fun to also have Pokemon on the map where you can see them and send out your Pokemon to kill them. And you get experience for doing that. There's just a lot of little things they did to make the game really great. And unfortunately, it was buried under all that performance issue stuff. But you do still see seams in this game. You can see exactly where they ran out of time. And like the towns, for example, there is nothing going on in the towns. They are just dead zones. You get your you get your gyms there, but the gyms all kind of look the same from the outside. Yeah, so parts of it still you can see like, okay, wow, that's really undercooked. But the point is, it's made me more excited for what Game Freak is going to do for not just Zah, but whatever comes next. We have that direct coming up.
One thing I'm going to recommend that you do as you play Scarvi that I didn't do and I wish I had is go back every now and then. You don't have to constantly go and check like it's the Normandy or whatever, but go back to the school every now and then, maybe after every couple of gyms or whatever, and do some of the classes they have there.
Yeah.
Because there's some really cool lore and stuff in those that builds up to what ultimately like the big finale of the game is. And I think the payoff is really worth it. So
That's also... Is it Clavel, his name is? The director of the school. He's hilarious. Like, when he's, like, with you with Team Star, like, oh, I'm not Clavel, I'm just this guy with a pompadour. It's a pretty funny game as well.
Yeah, I also have re-downloaded Scarlet on my end and have started playing the DLC because I never even, like, really started the DLC because of how just terribly it ran, even in a small zone. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to just... muscle my way through this. But then finally, like, I booted it up on the Switch too, and I was like, this is a different game. This is an entirely different game. And I was going through my roster and my box of Pokemon, and I was like, oh my god, I forgot, like, despite all my issues with Scarlet, like, I love the team of Pokemon I built in it. I love the roster I built over time, the way the Pokemon look in game. I wish their little sprites are so cool. I do have that part of me that wishes that you could play in like Dragon Quest XI, like 2D mode and just like voop it down and play like a classic Pokemon game because it's so good. But I really do like these games. I think my issue was always, like you said, empty towns with basically no buildings that you can go inside or anything like that. It's all just set dressing, and then just terrible performance. You're constantly fighting load times and frame rate stutters and everything in that game, and Switch 2 at least like fixed one part of that, and it's enough that has made me go like, I want to see the end of both DLCs and kind of like see this thing through to the end.
I will say there is some slowness still, like when you're in Pokemon battles, when you're waiting between throwing out a Pokemon, throwing it in and all that stuff, there is like a delay. And I don't think that's a performance issue. It's just the way it was designed for some stupid reason.
I've said this before, but I think Pokemon has left me behind in some ways. I'm playing Pokemon TCG Pocket still, and they have this Ultra Beast set. And cannot care. I like Sun and Moon, and I cannot care about these stupid Ultra Beasts that I keep pulling. They're so ugly.
But you have Buzzswole.
I do. I have two immersives of Buzzswole for some reason.
The thing that everyone remembers about the Ultra Beasts is there's one called, this is a terrible name, was it Guzzlord? Yeah.
Yes, which... I got a Guzzlord.
Guzzlord.
There's the Pokedex says that nobody has ever seen Guzzlord defecate. No one has found like any droppings. And someone on Tumblr drew a picture of a scientist pointing at Guzzlord and saying, "See this Pokemon? We ain't never seen it take a shit." And I just never forgot that.
The reason I'm saying this is that Scarvi just moved in a direction that I don't particularly resonate with, which is raids. That is the multiplayer aspect of it. Fighting giant Pokemon in a way that I find kind of boring. And it seems like
fan of the raids.
That is the direction that Game Freak is doubling down and tripling down on. Where I would much prefer very high level solo content that really pushes me to make interesting teams and things like that. Nintendo doesn't care. Game Freak doesn't care about that. Also, they left me behind in many ways when they went over to the VGC doubles. Yes, I'm still annoyed about that 10 years later, 20 years later. Oh my God, it's been like 20 years. So in that sense, even though Scarlet and Violet is better now, it's hard for me to find the motivation to really get into it, because the stuff that I really love about Pokemon in many ways is not there. And so I'll just keep playing the old ones, and that's okay. But Pokemon Zaw looks fun. I'll enjoy that. Still nominally enjoy the world. Still have TCG Pocket. Eventually they'll release a set that is not freaking Ultra Beast. But
someday.
I also know that I'm in the minority. A lot of people love Scarlet and Violet and think it's one of the best games released in the series to date. I hear constantly from people say, "Well, you know, if they would just fix the performance issues, Scarlet and Violet's incredible." And I'm like, sure, if you say so.
I think a lot of people really love the story and the region of Scarvi. And I think that is like completely, totally valid. I'm one of those people. I think the actual region, the story they tell, I think all the Area Zero stuff is really, really cool and really interesting. And Nadia, I can't wait for you to get there, because like the finale, like the final scene of this game is such a cool departure
for
Pokemon.
Tell. That they're building up to something really big, and I'm really looking forward to it.
It does a thing that I am frankly baffled that Pokemon has never done before, and I'm now going to be mad if they never do it again, because it
does
makes
Pikachu
so
die?
There's
much
a good
sense.
Chance they won't, because
no,
they're
no,
game
I don't, freak. I don't want to spoil it. It's not even
anything.
Like a story thing. It's a mechanical, like how that area plays out is so smart and so
you
well
turn
done.
To Pokemon.
It was the moment. The only teaser I'll give you is it's the moment where I was like, oh, Monolith Soft worked on this. Like that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
God, they're all having
you
sex
can see the fingerprints.
Babies with a Pokemon.
What?
You said Monolith Soft, and I'm thinking Blades, because, I mean, let's face it, the Blades are just like, in some of the Chronicles 2 are just... Anyway, let's move on.
I liked Sword and Shield a lot better than I liked Scarlet and Violet. And I liked Sword and Shield a lot better because I liked the region better. I liked the Pokemon better. I liked the customization a lot better. I liked the giant dumb Pokemon a lot better than Terastalization.
Terastalization.
No, I like it.
I have
it.
A chandelier
the type
on my head.
Stuff
crystals.
Cool.
Am I the fan of the
Yeah, they don't look cool,
this?
But like what it actually does is kind of cool.
Mechanically,
it is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Visually stupid. We put rock cats on them. I hate it.
I thought we just talked about how a lot of Pokemon are visually stupid. Like, it's... I don't think that's a reach.
Yeah, well, the original Pokemon are iconic, and the modern Pokemon are stupid. I guess I'm
old
now.
Sets of keys we found in our pocket, yeah.
I guess that I've officially reached peak Pokemon discourse.
Uh-huh.
I never talk shit about Klefki. If you don't have Klefki, you can't have Arcanine.
What?
If you don't want me at my Klefki, you can't have me at my Arcanine.
Exactly. If every Pokemon is cool like Arcanine, that means no Pokemon are cool like Arcanine. You got to have the Trubbish. You got to have that Klefki. You got to have that stupid ice cream cone.
If everything's stupid, then nothing's stupid.
Damn right.
I acknowledge that I have just become a typical Pokemon fan with all of these takes. I still like going to the Pokemon store. That's fun. Still like the
Antax
cultural
says,
items.
There's too many bipedal human-looking Pokemon out. You know when I first heard that criticism? I heard that criticism when when what was on the Game Boy Advance? What am I blanking
on? Ruby and Sapphire.
Ruby and Sapphire. I heard that complaint when Ruby and Sapphire came out. Everyone was like, oh, Lucario is only a, he's just a Digimon, and it was just, it just got worse from there.
I mean, he kind of is a Digimon.
He kind of is.
Also, Lopunny, Digimon the story sexy, time stranger. The sexy bunny Pokemon?
Lopo, I almost called him Loparit, which is a Final Fantasy 14 time.
Yeah, that's something different.
What'd you say, Eric?
No, I was going to say we forgot to talk about in the upcoming RPGs that look really good. Digimon Story Time Stranger looks really, really good.
Oh, we talked about that Story Time Stranger because we said it sounded like something you would say to get kids in a van.
Story Time Stranger.
Hey, kids. Yeah.
No, that game's going to be really good. Yes, Lopunny is a problem.
Lopunny. What is the
Lopunny is a problem. Put that in the title.
What's the Pokemon evolution before Lopunny? Because I have a trivia about it.
Buneary.
I don't know.
Buneary. Okay, so here's an interesting thing about Buneary. It is the only Pokemon that absolutely loathes you. Its friendship stat is zero when you catch it. And that's really? The only Pokemon apparently that happens to.
I thought
what
that
does it
was.
Mean? What does it mean? Why does it hate
what
us?
What does it mean? What does it know?
Why does it want to kill us?
Is that for real?
Buneary and
I need to look this.
It's true.
I need to look. Oh, yeah. It starts with the basis of a friendship of zero. Significantly lower than the standard of 50 or 7.
I mean, you did just like beat it up and catch it. Like that's kind of messed up when you think about it.
And it uses people have used this in creepypastas and stuff like that. Just like when you see like one of those haunted Pokemon games, it's always going to have a Buneary in there using Struggle or whatever that really terrible name new, that really grim move is when the Pokemon hates you.
Or like flinch or whatever.
Yeah. Like.
Oh yeah. No, I know. I know what you're talking about. There's Yeah. There's a move that you can use that is depending on a Pokemon hating you.
Yeah.
Frustration. That's the one.
What a terrible. Yeah. That's such a. Sometimes Pokemon just does things that stabs you in the heart. Like, can you imagine you have a Pokemon that hates you so bad and it knows one move and it just all that move is to get everything it hates about you out onto the world, the other rival Pokemon.
I don't know.
No, how do you not like Deltarune? You should like everything you've just said is like you should like Deltarune.
I know. I'll get back to it. I will.
Wow. I feel like I've learned a lot about Pokemon. Is Buneary having a super low friendship level like Gandhi wanting to nuke everybody?
Apparently,
no, it's
just
Gandhi
a bug
just
and that
tired.
It became a meme.
You put a minus in front of it.
It's like Dr. Manhattan on Mars being like, I tire of this world.
Exactly.
that's that. Buneary tires of these trainers.
And on that note, Nadia, take us home.
Weren't there already? Okay.
I guess that kind of was the pit, wasn't it?
Well, I didn't have
that pit enough.
I had another story.
Was that,
a short
was,
one.
Is that pit?
Are you not pitted? I don't know how to say that. So Eric, you remember last time we were kind of all together, and I could tell a story. I told you about the wood shop and the drill down the pants, right?
The yes. number of times I've heard the drill down the pants story is
we told that story just a couple
extreme.
Weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm telling you this because there was a follow-up. And this, again, was another story. I'm pretty
the
sure
sequel.
I told. There was a sequel in the metal shop. No. I think I told this story, like, before. And, again, it was a long time ago, and Eric hadn't heard it. So here you go. I wasn't there, but a friend described it in beautiful detail. This was a metal shop, and there was a kid named Arthur. He was like a little tiny Russian kid who, I think he was a refugee, but he was always kind of like up to mischief. And again, this is a metal shop. We have welding tanks. We have a welding thingy, like a whole heavy duty setup. This kid went to the welding tanks. He turned the gas up all the way. Then he lit the flame. And this jet of fire just arches across the metal shop. Like a dragon. And my teacher, this is the same teacher who did the woodshop, just grabs his kid by his collar and drags him to the door, goes directly out to the parking lot. It's the emergency exit. And it's raining. It's just pissing rain. They just shove the door open. Shove them out to the parking lot. Slams the door.
Oh, I've never seen Nadia break on her own.
I've never seen Nadia break. Oh my god,
that was such, like, oh man, just the description.
I've never heard the term, but we've never broken Nadia before.
I've never heard the term pissing rain before. That was a new
You've
one.
Never heard pissing rain? You gotta grow up in my family, man.
That's like a Bostonian thing. It's like, yeah, it's pissing rain. I can't
it's
do pissa, a Bostonian
it's a
accent.
Pissa.
Wicked Pissa.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect sequel to this shop class story. Yeah, I thought so. Especially getting thrown out in the parking
so
lot.
Was it just like a big poof? Was it just like just a really solid...
Like,
Yeah.
Yeah, just a jet of flame. And it's like, holy shit. Like, and I was already terrified of the metal shop. So just what I need. Because when you go to a metal shop, it's like, okay, here's the wood shop. Here's a bandsaw. You know, bandsaws are scary enough. Here's a metal bandsaw. It's like three times as big and cut your fingers off, like, twice as fast.
You ever think about how we are, like, the apex predators of the earth, and yet we're still probably, like, really stupid on any scale? Like,
we
are still just incredibly stupid creatures.
Yeah, all the time. That's what TikTok's all about.
We gave dumb monkeys nuclear weapons and the power to just obliterate the earth. I think about that often. Yeah, we are dumb monkeys.
Another problem is that we can kind of read each other's thoughts way too much. Like, we know way too much about each other with thanks to social media and stuff.
I'm always saying this. I know way too much about everyone else.
Yeah.
And on that note, that's the end of this week's episode of Axe the Blood God. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon. You can get the show ad-free. You can get lots of bonus content. Subscribe to our newsletter. See more pits from Nadia. She's just fully in control of this thing. I've lost all control of the newsletter. It's over for the world. It's indeed. Good times. Go and subscribe. I think you subscribe automatically if you sign up for the Patreon. So good stuff. And we have a charity stream coming up next week. Make sure to subscribe to our channel, twitch.tv/bloodgodpod. And also, if you subscribe to us on Twitch, you can watch us every single week. We do this every week. A weekly recording, a live recording of Axe of the Blood God. You can see a live pit. You can see Nadia telling all of her stories. You can see all of the things. And so come and join us. And we also stream from here sometimes. It's a lot of fun. I think we're going to be streaming from here more often. Perhaps. We'll see. Perhaps. We're heading into the Axe of the Blood God post show now. We're going to chill out. Maybe we'll talk about this topic that I've had that we were kind of alluding to in the pre-show, which is arguing about whether RPGs fast forward is a good thing in RPGs. Eric seems to think that you don't need it. I think you need more of it. I just want the RPGs to play themselves. So come hang out in the post show. We'll talk about some of that. And then inevitably it will devolve into something ridiculous as it always does. That's available to our Stars of Destiny. Until then, I've been your host, Kat Bailey. Thank you so much for listening. And for Nadia, Eric, and myself, we'll see you next week. And until then, happy adventuring.
Let's do our best.